The Bundesliga diaries are back for November to discuss. Mainz in contrast, Leverkusen's recovery, and fans standing up in the face of new security measures. Hello and welcome to this month's episode of the Bundesliga Diaries in the studio with Richard and Mirko. Lads, how are we? Are we getting on?
Yeah, all right. The first week since both of our teams have won on the weekend. Since? I don't know. I didn't look it up, but it must have been sometime.
Has it not happened this season already?
I don't know. I mean, we are pretty good this season.
Yeah, and we're not that bad. So,
anyway. Always seemed, I don't know, it was away and home though, wasn't it? That was the thing. You were away as well, weren't you?
Yeah, we won away.
I mean, it might have changed at some point, but Union and Frankfurt rarely... I mean, Union rarely win away. So if they're always lined up like that, then...
Well, the opening day of the season, it happened.
There you go.
So it has already happened this season. Nice. So.
Should we jump straight into, well, the European games first? We've got... we're at the halfway point of all three of the European competitions. At the time of recording, some games will have been played, if not all, by the time this comes out. We'll start with Bayern Munich before their game against Arsenal. Like pretty much everything else, they've dominated, haven't they? 4 wins out of 4, top of the table. Last game in the Champions League was the 2-1 win over PSG, which was a great performance on all levels, really. They were brilliant in the first half, played PSG off the park, then had the red card from Diaz, which was a red card, Stonewall, and then had a far more workmanlike backs against the wall second half, and they came out of that well too. So showing there's more size to them than just dominating, dispatching everything that comes in front of them. It's been, well, incredible start to the season, hasn't it? You know, they won their first 16 games in all competitions, then came up against the mighty Union.
Well, you know, not everyone can get 3 points against us.
First point against Bayern?
No. We've drawn against them before, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 times, maybe.
But never beaten them.
That was the closest we've ever come to beating them. If it wasn't for 93rd minute equaliser from Kane, then...
It was a great performance as well from Union, defending on the front foot. But that's the only blemish, if you call it that, for Bayern this season. Otherwise, they've won every single game. Best start ever to a Bundesliga season. 31 points from a possible 33 to kick off. They've been supreme, haven't they? And regardless of what happens in the Arsenal game, I think it'll be a really good game between two teams who are really at the peak of their powers right now. But regardless of what happens in that, Bayern are almost already guaranteed a spot in the top eight. They only need really 4 more points, I think, from the last 4 games to really do it. So should be comfortable for Bayern. For the rest of the teams, still a lot more to play for. Dortmund are the next best place. Just to point out, Bayern are top of the league phase standings before the Arsenal game. Dortmund 14th. They have 7 points from their opening 4 games. It's been a mix, hasn't it? I mean, the first 3 games were really good. They should have got the 3 points against Juventus, 4-2 up in the third, fourth minute of injury time, only to draw 4-4. Then 2 good wins. Then they played Man City last time out, and they were outplayed, I think it's fair to say. Showed the limitations that Dortmund do still have, even if it's been a good start to the season for them. On the whole, they play Villarreal next at home again. While this recording, after that, Bodo Glimt, Tottenham and Inter. So it feels like 7 points from their first 4 games with those fixtures left. Still in a good position. 3 of them at home. Villarreal, Bodo Glimt and Inter all at home, Spurs away. So it feels they're still in a good position to definitely get a playoff spot. And if they could get 3 wins from those 4 games, which is not impossible, even a top 8 place might not be beyond the realms of possibility.
I think they're going to finish close to the 8th spot.
Like last
somewhere, somewhere between 8 and 12. And if they finish not within the top 8, they're going to hate themselves for not beating Juventus, for example. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, in the end, it's like, it's a decent performance again. It's really hard to say where, in which competition Dortmund is better. League is also decent. Champions League is decent. Yeah, I mean, they can't complain too much.
Feels like 8th to 12th place is probably where Dortmund are in Europe anyway at the moment on the whole. And that's where they were roundabout last year. I know they got to the Champions League final, didn't they, 2 years ago, but that came at the detriment of their league form to an extent. It's where they are realistically anyway. So, you know, if they can reach a little bit above that.
But that's kind of interesting. Like you said, there should be around 8 and 12 like every year in the Champions League. Then I would say that's definitely better than Leverkusen. But in the league, it feels like Leverkusen is now a bit ahead of Dortmund.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, we'll talk about Leverkusen in a little bit more detail later on, but we need to see what we're going to get from Leverkusen still. It's a very new team, and whether they can keep that consistency up. It's been 2 years where they've been the top two still to come. But I don't disagree with you. We have had this discussion about who is the second team in Germany at the moment, and Leverkusen are making more and more of a case for it. But Dortmund, at least in Europe, have been more consistently impressive down the years, you would say, for Leverkusen. They had the Europa League run, didn't they? But beyond that, they've not really done much in Europe for quite a while. So I'm not sure. Coming to Leverkusen, though, they have 5 points from their opening four games, leads them in the playoff places. They won 1-0 against Benfica last time out, which was a massive result after the 7-2 hammering at PSG, which, yeah, was chastening. I mean, they were in the game up until the 41st minute, and then PSG scored three in before half-time from that point onwards to kill the game, effectively. Both teams were down to 10 men at that point as well already, so it was a bit of a crazy game, all in all. But they've had a couple of results like that, Leverkusen, where, again, it's top quality, in all fairness, but after the two draws they had to start their campaign as well, it leaves them precarious to an extent. So that win against Benfica was really important. They've got Man City away, Newcastle home, Olympiacos away, and Villarreal at home. Again, I mean, expect them to lose to City. The other three, I think they'd expect to pick up points in all of them and probably be looking to win at least two, I would say. So I think they will, I think they'll be in the playoff places relatively comfortably as well. I don't know if you guys agree.
Well, last year you needed 11 points to get the last playoff spot. I mean, Zagreb did go out on also on 11 points due to goal difference. And Leverkusen at the moment have got 5. So they've, you know, need at least 2 wins from those 4 games. And then hopefully maybe try and have to pick up another win in the other, or at least a draw. They'd be cutting it close if they only picked up 2 wins out of the last 4, I think.
I think they'll make it, though. I think they'll pick up points in those last 3 games. It might even need some of City.
They only have 3 games because they're playing City away. That's a miss.
It's a free and hit.
It's a loss. So it's 3 games and they need to win 2. So that makes it harder. But I also think this year maybe like 9 or 10 points can be enough. I think the points tally was fairly high last year.
Are you hoping that for Frankfurt?
I was just
I was hoping maybe 9 can be enough, because I mean, Frankfurt might get to 9. I don't think there's more in them.
Yeah, so coming to Frankfurt, who've got 4 points from their opening 4 games.
Which is all right.
Yeah, it is all right. It's disappointing considering you won the first game 5-1 and thinking, well, we're on one now. Then, you know, contrived to lose the next 2 5-1. And then in contrast, that the 0-0 in Napoli, which was a terrible game of football, but probably what Frankfurt needed a little bit of defensive solidity, make the game tight, make the game a little bit cagey, really, compared to open, which they've done far too often. It is a good point away at Napoli. I think it puts them a little bit on the right track now. If you looked at Frankfurt's fixtures before any games were played, you'd have looked at their fixtures on the whole and gone, I find it really hard. And we did say that. Looking at it now, I think that you'll feel there's a few more points in there. Atalanta have not been great this season at all, and they're going down, if anywhere, hardly up. I know they've changed managers, but they don't look very good. Barcelona will be tough away, but Barcelona, will probably play a style of football that will suit Frankfurt. You know, they play a high line, pace in behind, and that's what Frankfurt like and enjoy with the wingers. So they might be able to get something from that. It'll be a tough ask, but the style of play might suit a little bit.
A little optimistic. Yeah. I mean, the last match in Barcelona, Frankfurt did win, but that was in a Europa League competition, and clubs like that usually don't care about
two
Europa
very
League.
Different sides.
I'm just basing it on the style
of
play.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think if we're getting battered by Atletico 5-1. Don't think we're getting much, but that is the free hit.
Yeah,
because the other games, if I'm correct, we have Atalanta at home, we have Karabakh away, and then we have Tottenham at home.
Yeah, yeah, which I think all three of those.
Tottenham at home, you could get a point. Even if you get Atalanta and Tottenham just 2 points, if you beat Karabakh, that's 9 points. And then you just don't get bettered by Barcelona.
Is Spurs the last game?
Yeah.
Yes.
That could be a bit of a, we need a result there, kind of almost a knockout. Or at least for Frankfurt, probably Spurs might be a little bit more safer at that point.
Yeah, Spurs have actually started really well in the Champions League. And they could already, I mean, they'll already be secure a playoff spot, I think, by that point anyway. Might not need it. Yeah, I mean, that could play into Frankfurt's hands. I feel like there's points there to be won. And it, I know the Köln game was a little bit of a step backwards in terms of
stability.
Yeah, certainly defensive stability. But it seems like you've sorted things a little bit out.
I think it all improved when we changed the goalkeeper again for the second time. I mean, it was a change back. We started with Zetterer, then switched to Kaos Santos, and then switched back to Zetterer. And from then on, the stability was way better. The general games were way better. So, yeah, there is chances. And even if they get eliminated, it's not in Leipzig fashion like they
absolutely
did last year where they get bettered every week. And it doesn't matter. If in the end we don't get to the elimination round, it doesn't matter because that was never goal number one. Goal number one is the league. Doesn't really matter. And I'm happy with how they played, even if some betterings have been fairly high, but I mean, if you don't expect much, you can't get disappointed.
That's true.
Love it.
How many teams do we expect to go into the knockouts on the whole?
From Germany?
Yeah.
As in playoffs?
I'm going to say anything. So playoffs or the top eight. Yeah, okay. Just knockout rounds in general.
I mean, if I want Frankfurt, I have to say four.
I'm going to say all four. I'm going to go with all four. I think the fixtures remaining play into the hands of teams that Leverkusen and Frankfurt who need it. Dortmund are already in a pretty good position. I think they'll be fine, and Bayern are all but through. So I'll go with four.
I feel maybe three. I feel either Leverkusen or Frankfurt might drop out.
And you want to go four based on?
I have to say four, yeah. No.
Well, it's a little change, Mirko. You being positive. Maybe that's something we could see more of in the future. The Europa League, two German representatives in that. Freiburg, brilliant. They're second in the league phase. 10 points from their four games. Again, probably feel like they're already on the edge of a top eight spot. Never mind just qualifying. I mean, if they don't get the knockouts now, at least it would be something disastrous would have to happen, quite frankly, in their remaining four games. Pilsen away, Salzburg at home, Maccabi Tel Aviv at home, and Lille away. Salzburg, Tel Aviv at home. Again, you look at that and go, hopefully 6 points, really, the way they played in Europe. Victoria Pilsen away. They did drop down from the Champions League qualification rounds, but they got battered by Rangers. So, you know, that might tell you where Pilsen are in terms of quality and danger for Freiburg. So I feel like Freiburg are in a good position to go for. And they'd be really impressive. The game against Nice, they were really good, really clinical. Nice not been doing great, admittedly, but still a really professional European performance from Freiburg, which we're seeing more and more of as they get more used to it. And then Stuttgart, little bit more tricky for them. 6 points from their first four matches. They are probably similarly to Leverkusen in the Champions League, needed a win against Feyenoord last time out and did win to get to 6 points. Go Ahead Eagles away, Maccabi Tel Aviv at home, Roma away, and Young Boys at home. Also feels like they've got enough fixtures for that to sort themselves out. Roma away will be tough. Roma probably one of the better teams in the Europa League. But the other three, you feel like Stuttgart, they're a good team as well, especially with Undav back now. Feel like they've got that extra attacking threat.
Yeah, good enough to get the right amount of points. But I mean, also Young Boys at home. Young Boys is fairly close to Stuttgart, also the city burn is pretty close to Stuttgart, so lots of away fans. You might lose a game like that, but then on the other hand, you can also win 3 out of 4 games. So level is, I would say the level in the Europa League in general is pretty good. So yeah, that's why it's been so tough for Stuttgart. I would say Stuttgart's the better team than Freiburg, but Freiburg just looks better because they had better performances in the Europa League. They were just like, they had their best games in the Europa League, whereas Stuttgart had some days, Basel at home, or was that was an away fixture where they lost, where they didn't really look that good. But yeah, there's enough room and they're going to easily get into the knockout round.
I would be surprised to not see both them. Freiburg are pretty much already.
Freiburg will go through direct.
Yeah, I'd be surprised to not see both of them in the knockout stages as well, to be honest. And then the Conference League with Mainz, the sole German representative. they're looking good in the Conference League as well. Stark contrast to their Bundesliga form, which we'll also dive into. But three wins from three, that puts them third in the table. Only six games as well in the Conference League compared to eight in the other two competitions. So 9 points already.
Almost playoff round. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're already in the playoff round at least anyway, with 9 points from three games. And with 9 points from three games and the fixtures they've got left, Craiovia, Lech Poznan and Samsunspor, they'll feel like a top eight or last 16 automatic spot is well within their grasp as well. So I'm feeling quite confident in all German teams still being in European competition outside of the league phase. I don't think that's that outrageous.
Yeah.
I'm still on for all three to win there, or three German teams to win the European competitions. Let's hope so. Pokal draw, the third round draw. Some nice fixtures, some interesting looking fixtures in there. A rematch of that Union Bayern game at the Alte Försterei.
Yeah, that should be a good one. Still trying to get a ticket, but we'll...
I know you are trying to get multiple.
Yeah, but...
I'm not liking my chances.
Oh, mate, I hadn't even thought about getting one for you at the moment, because, you know, it's a game that pretty much every Union fan wants to go to. So I'm looking forward to it. We're going to need to play at least as well as what we did in the league game. But if we do that, you never know. I thought we played really well and maybe need Bayern to have a bit of an off day, which they did have against us. They weren't that bad, but they did have a bit of an off day if you compare to what they've been doing against other teams. But even so, weeknight game under the floodlights in the cup. The atmosphere is going to be incredible. And yeah.
Is it next week?
It is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
That one's on the 3rd. The Wednesday. So that will be a very interesting and enticing game. We've got Dortmund against Leverkusen, who will play in back-to-back games as well. Quite interestingly, they'll play in the Bundesliga. Hertha against Kaiserslautern, which means that at least one second-tier team will be in the quarterfinals.
Nice.
Gladbach-Pauli, Bochum-Stuttgart, Leipzig Magdeburg derby of sorts, based purely on distance. Obviously Leipzig don't really have derbies, to be honest. No one or everybody hates them. I mean, but no one hates them existed. Especially
they haven't existed 15 years ago, so
exactly
no traditional rivalries.
HSV Kiel though, I mean, that is geographically not that far away. I'm sure Kiel will manage to bring probably all of Kiel, I would imagine.
The tight one as well, probably not too much between the teams. Well, there is a difference between the teams, obviously, but I feel like Kiel will have confidence that they can nick a result there. Then Freiburg, Darmstadt as well. So those games will be played across the Tuesday the 2nd and Wednesday the 3rd of December. Also, briefly before we move on, just to confirm that Germany are going to be at the World Cup finals next year. Thanks to I know you're buzzing, Mirko. 6-0 hammering of Slovakia in the final game, which was a good result because they lost the first game between the two away from home.
And there was a bit of pressure on them going into the game.
Would have been enough, so it wasn't highest pressure, but like they couldn't lose. And they played pretty poor 3-4 days ago before the game against Luxembourg. Yeah. So everyone was like, wait, if you play that poor, you might lose. But then they turned up finally.
Yeah, and it feels like, I don't know, it's 5 wins from 6 in the qualification campaign. It's... good.
The results look good, but we touched upon it in the last episode, and you saw it again with this squad in this little international break. Nagelsmann doesn't have a clear idea of what his best starting 11 is, or, you know, close to knowing, I'd probably say, more than 75-80% of his squad, which, when you're not that many months away from the actual World Cup, is not a good thing. And I think Mirko mentioned it with some of the results that they've had. The performances, they've got the wins, but the performances haven't been convincing apart from this last one, really.
So let's dive into our Bundesliga recap over the last month and have a look at where some teams stand. And we talked about Mainz there in the Conference League, and it's probably therefore makes sense to discuss their Bundesliga form or their season as a whole, because the form is very contrasting, as we said. 3 wins out of 3 in the Conference League, 1 win in 11 in the Bundesliga. It's not even like you could turn around and say that the quality of the teams in the Conference League they played has been particularly poor. Fiorentina they managed to beat. They reached semi-finals of last year's Conference League, win the final 2 years ago. So they are a good team. They're a team that Mainz wouldn't expect to beat at any point, and they did get 3 points there. Omonoia are second in the Cypriot League. Zrinjski, top of the Bosnian League, have been good there. So they've at least beaten teams who are in form and playing well, which can often give teams an extra edge, even if the overall quality is a little bit lower. And yet, in the Bundesliga, they can't pick up points. I think it would be also worth pointing out that Mainz haven't been terrible. They haven't played terribly. They've not been able to nick points in enough games. They've lost five games by one goal. Five of their seven losses have been by a single goal.
Also against difficult teams.
Yeah.
RB Leipzig 1-0, Dortmund 2-0, 1-0 away at Frankfurt, 2-1 away at Stuttgart. So
4-3 against Leverkusen as well,
which wasn't that close, to be fair. I think Leverkusen was in control of the game, but like, anyway, to score 3 against Leverkusen is also a skill. One was a penalty, yeah? But like, they always look they could get something in games, and that's what I like about Mainz. I like watching their games because they always play forward and they always play for something. They never just say, all right, we try to defend and maybe we can get a 0-0. They always try to play football. They did that in the last 5-10 seasons. They always tried it, even if they're under pressure. And last year it worked out really, really good. This year it hasn't worked out so far. But they are good in the Conference League. And in the league, yeah, it doesn't work out. If you look at the expected goals, expected points and stuff, Mainz is the team that should have scored the most goals more than other teams. 4.5 goals, they should have scored more, should have conceded also a little less, and they should have 7.5 points more by now. Because they were so close in the games that those goals would convert to so many points.
Which was referenced specifically by Hendrickson recently as well, mentioning that...
I mean, he's a smart manager. I mean, the reasons, if you look at Amiri, for example, he is playing the same football as last season, or it feels like. Maybe he's even scoring more, assisting more, scoring free kicks. 7 goals, 2 assists in the Bundesliga, also scored in the other competitions. So he works great. The rest of the offense is maybe the biggest problem, because Viper, who had a really good summer for the under 21, 23, whatever national team. Then they have Hollerbach from Union, who wasn't that bad. At Union, and yeah, both haven't scored at all in the Bundesliga, Hollerbach and Viper.
But the issue,
play Lee as a striker because the others just somehow don't work, and then they play Amiri behind them, of course. But yeah, the goals, they haven't been, it hasn't been worked out.
They haven't replaced Burkhardt, have they? Quite simply, I mean, it's, you know, you lose an 18-goal striker who's a centre-forward and you replace him with Hollerbach, who's more of a second striker, wide player. You know, he'll work hard and he'll run the channels, but he's not, you know, you're not going to rely on him to, you know, stay in the middle and convert chances. And that's what Mainz certainly appear to be missing.
And also that, you know, last season you had Burkhardt, Amiri, Nebel was not only a great combination, the way they used to link up with each other was really good, but they also started a lot of games together. And this season, both Amiri and Nebel have played less, and obviously they've lost Burkhardt. So out of that kind of three that was really important in the way that they played last season, there's a lot of it missing. I mean, just alone last season, Mainz lost 3 of the 5 games that Burkhardt was injured in, and that kind of shows you how important he was last season. And then this season, yeah, trying to replace him, and then also some of the other players that aren't playing as much is clearly making a difference. We have seen this with other teams that maybe aren't that used to being in Europe. We had Köln that went down after a European campaign. Union were almost in a relegation playoff. Yes, we had other successful European competitions, but when we're in the Champions League, almost in the relegation playoff. Last season, Heidenheim, relegation playoff after playing in Europe. Some of these teams that maybe once every 10 years or whatever get into Europe, who don't have the squad to deal with it.
So you're saying Heidenheim's getting once into 10 years?
Okay, maybe.
Well, never.
Yeah. But certainly teams that aren't used to being in Europe, put it that way.
Yeah, and especially Heidenheim and Mainz and Union, who then go all in because they celebrate it so much. The club loves it, the fans love it.
Heidenheim had a good record last season.
Yeah, and they were also decent in the Europa League. And like those, the players, it's like, they know maybe this is the only time in my life that I'm playing in an international competition. And of course, they are more focused. You can't really, even if you would tell them, like, all right, this is a free hit, just relax, just enjoy the atmosphere. But it's important on the Sunday. We need to beat Wolfsburg, who they're playing every year. The players will be focused on the Europa League.
That is partly true. And I think also Mainz play a high intensity, certainly short burst style of football. They rank really highly for intensive runs and sprints, for example. And to be able to reproduce that in both the Bundesliga and the Conference League, it's difficult to do. Worth pointing out that the Mainz have already played 5 games more than perhaps a Hoffenheim, let's say, for example. You know, they had to play the qualification round to get into the Conference League, and then they've also played the 3 games. They've also got quite an old squad. There are a lot of players they're relying on who are over 32. You know, even players like Amiri of the end of their 20s, and you know, you're relying on players who are getting older. And Sven Vidmer is a good example of that. He's the club captain. He's come off the bench 6 times, started 12 of their 18 games in all competitions. He's the captain of the team. And we talk about Lee, who's 33, you know, also a player who relies on his intensity and his work rate to contribute to the team. That becomes harder to do when you're playing every 3 days, or certainly they're playing more games than they would be used to. So you're clearly seeing that effect on them in the league. And it makes sense because there's quality, but they're not quite able to get over the line and pick up points.
Yeah, and I also think that they possibly could have had a tough start. I think if you look at it in the league, they've only played 4 games against teams currently in the bottom half. So they've clearly played a lot of teams who are having good seasons. Having said that, they have also lost both games to promoted sides. They lost 1-0 at home to Köln, and they got battered 4-0 away at HSV, which, yeah, a normal Mainz side, I don't think would do that. And then I think last year they just overreached quite a lot, that, you know, they got points in games that realistically you're seeing this season, yeah, it's fair enough that they're not going to win these games. For example, you know, this season they lost against Dortmund. That was a game they won last season. Mm. They lost against Leverkusen. They drew that game last season. They lost against Stuttgart, which was a game they drew last season. They lost this season to Frankfurt. They won that game last season. And they only drew...
Away at Frankfurt?
Yeah. I know you've wiped it from your memory already. And then also this season, they only drew with Hoffenheim when they won their home game last season. And those are all realistically teams that you sort of say, well, yeah, you probably would be losing against them. And I think they just got into Europe last season because of getting those extra points in perhaps games you wouldn't necessarily expect. So I think they've got now maybe a little bit of run of games. It's going to be difficult because they still are playing in the Conference League, but they've got perhaps a run of games against teams that you go, right, yeah, these are the actual places where you should be picking up points pretty much every season for a team like Mainz.
Having said all of that, and you know, they are in difficulty in the Bundesliga, 17th of the 18 teams, and only that one win alongside Heidenheim, also only one win. Henriksen's under no pressure, is he? He's got a lot of credit in the bank for last season in particular.
Yeah, and also, I mean, there's 2 scenarios. Either they're still going to stay for some rounds in the international competition, but then also I think the amount of games gets a bit lower after the group stage. Mm. And then, the intensity might not be as high as now, and they can also concentrate a bit more on the league, or they get eliminated, and after that they have even more time in the league. Because the quality of the squad and even the manager is just way too high to get relegated. Like, Mainz should easily finish in between 10th and 15th, 10th and 14th, somewhere in that area. And the quality is there, and you see it. And we said it, they are in games. They can always get something. And they will win games at one point. And they should not worry right now. And even if until the winter, they're not getting out of the relegation spots, they know they have enough time next year. Because like Pauli, Heidenheim, those teams are weaker than Mainz. Hamburg is weaker. Köln is not that much better. Bremen is not much better. So they have time. And if we're looking back last season after 11 match days, yes, they looked good. 4 wins, 4 draws. They were already looking good. Richard said it, they beat Dortmund. Everything worked out for them. And this year, it feels like nothing worked out. But Mainz are also, they know this situation. 5 years ago,
I remember,
after 11 match days, they were also second last. Schalke was last by then. Mainz have only won once, drawn twice, so 1 point less than they have right now. Turned it around, also almost got into Europe. That's that season, I think. So there's plenty of time. They should just relax and keep their style of football they're playing, because it's good football and they will get results.
Yeah, it's not far away. I think there was a time that I was always tipping them to go down, and you know,
that has changed.
They know how to get out of it. Makes a lot of changes to the back three and the back five, and maybe that's a little bit of instability there. Not quite sure exactly what that looks like, the best composition. But yeah, Christian Heide has already come out and said that there's no discussions at all in regards to his job, which I guess is not always a good thing if the board and the higher-ups are coming out and saying it. But in this case, I feel like there's truth in those words. And
I mean, he does have to do some changes in defensive, since Core gets sent off a couple of times.
Oh, the red card
he
against
now has the record for most send-offs in the Bundesliga, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the red card against Hoffenheim sent off was terrible. What a terrible challenge.
I liked it. This is the foul you kind of want to see.
Oh,
I mean,
sure
he was
that.
Going for the ball and just hit the player.
Oh. Mate, he passed it with one foot and he tackled him on the back of his calf on the other leg.
Like, it was a terrible challenge.
It was horrendous.
He was too late, but it was a clear tackle.
He was too late
in the direction
and too
of the
high.
Ball.
Yeah.
Mirko.
It was the worst foul I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was not. It was not.
And yes, the Hoffenheim player can be lucky that he's not injured.
Yeah.
And I think Kors also pretty happy that he didn't injure him. He apologized afterwards, obviously. He could have injured him. He got the Hoffenheim player got really lucky. But, I mean, it's a foul and stuff like that happens.
Coming to Leverkusen now, in contrast, whereas unlike Mainz, they are doing very well. They are currently third in the Bundesliga, which, after the first two games under Ten Hag, you probably wouldn't have called at this point in the season. But Hjulmand has come in, Kasper Hjulmand, that is the new head coach, and he's been really impressive. The thing is, certainly the way he holds himself and his behaviour and his interaction with, well, pretty much everybody is chalk and cheese, isn't it, really, with Ten Hag? He's very much a man manager and someone who really concentrates on the feeling of the group and the positivity and belief rather than just on the tactical side of the game, you'd say.
Hjulmand,
that is, obviously. I mean, come on, Ten Hag was loggerheads of everybody within about 6-7 weeks.
Well, I mean, I would say Hjulmand is probably also a tactical manager.
I didn't mean he's not a tactical manager, but whereas Ten Hag, it felt like, had already disregarded having a connection with his players or a good atmosphere, Hjulmand gives that part of his management and his style far more importance.
I think there you see the benefit of having had someone who is a national manager, because as a national manager, I do question how much tactically you can really get into it. Yes, you need to be able to read a game, react, set a team up well and whatnot, but realistically, I think being a national manager is about you've got to get a great team harmony, get everyone together, get everyone on the same page in a very short space of time, because you don't see them that often. And you've seen an immediate response from that. I don't want to encourage that managers get sacked quickly, like what you saw with Ten Hag, but I did sort of hint at the idea that making a quick decision in this case left them with ample time to save their season. And I would definitely say this now. I think Leverkusen, you can really just see those two matches and everything that went on with Ten Hag is very much in the rearview mirror now. They're very much looking forward. And I think I said that I didn't fancy them to get into the Champions League this season, but I might start to have to row back on that one.
At the moment, they look good value to be in the top four. It's starting to get a little bit to like how they were under Alonso in terms of their ability to dominate games, but they do it in a very different way than they were under Alonso, with that, you know, that kind of possession style that is keeping it in that, not the final third, but maybe the 10, 15 yards just before the final third and trying to rotate it there. They're far more direct, even if they've also got a really high possession rate, second in the league this season. What they have now that they've perhaps not had is the attacking midfielders have pace. If you look at somebody like Poku, for example, if Kafana's been playing there as well, and he's also got a bit of speed about him. Those players are more direct, perhaps, in their running style than perhaps a Florian Wirtz was. 27 goals, the second highest in the league, or joint second highest in the league, and 22 points from 9 games is the best start for a manager since Sami Hyypiä, at Leverkusen anyway, in 2013. So Heumann has done a very good job. It doesn't feel like he was trying to do too much different than what Ten Hag was in the first three games that he had on the whole. But it can be so important to have a manager whose attitude is in the right place. Belief, self-confidence is so important at the highest level. A lot of players and a lot of teams, really, the actual ability of the players is not like that much different, really. The players are capable of doing the same things, but if you look at Bayern's players, they have the confidence and the belief to be able to do it more regularly. So I think having a manager who can get that out of his players is really important. Out of all the new arrivals, and there were a lot, anybody who stood out you've enjoyed watching?
Well, you mentioned Poku just there, because I like someone who also just, if you're going to play out wide, then play out wide and really try and isolate your man. And he just can also then play other little balls in to midfielders who are running on. And he's, he stood out as one for sure.
Cafana as well. He's been a bit of a revelation, I think, because 19, and if you've got Patrick Schick up front, who's going to be the number one striker, and is still, I mean, there's no doubt about that. He's had a good season so far as well. But he didn't expect Cafana to play that much at all, really, if only a bit part. He's already made a big impact and a big impression. He's only 19. Ibrahim Matza started slowly, but has come into it more and more in the past few weeks, was really important against Paderborn in the Cup, and then great game against Heidenheim. They won 6-0. A lot of players had a great game, but he was important in that. It feels like some of the older players have stepped up in a way that I wasn't expecting them to do. Critical, I was anyway, of their transfer business. I was thinking they've gone really young in the players they've signed, and I'm not sure they have that balance. But if you look at players like Grimaldo, Schick, Tapsoba, Alex Garcia as well, Robert Andrich, to an extent, but he's been in and out a little bit more this season.
Hoffman's seemed all right as well.
Hoffman as well has had a bit of a rejuvenation, yeah, which is good to see, because he's a really good player. I like him. But those players, those older players, have really stepped up into leadership positions and in their performances on the pitch as well. And you can see that it gives the younger players and the younger group more confidence to show what they're about as well. And Heumann's actually managed to find a pretty good balance between youth and that more experience that Leverkusen has, which I wasn't expecting to actually pull off this season. So credit where credit is due there. Where can they improve?
I mean, from the top five of Bundesliga, they have the worst defense. So if there's any area, that would probably be the first. A bit more stability there. Even in the cup, conceded 2 or 3 against Paderborn. That shouldn't happen. 7 against PSG also. Yeah. Maybe 1 or 2 too high. So that would be the area number one.
15 conceded. And they've kept 3 clean sheets as well in the Bundesliga.
But in general, I mean, it does look like they're getting better each week. So, I mean, I wouldn't put too much pressure on them needing to improve soon, because it feels like they're on a good way.
Let's come to Gladbach next, who had a very poor start, let's say, and that's why Gerardo Seoane was relieved of his duties with Eugen Polanski coming in his place. He was initially hired on an interim basis, but has now been given the job permanently until 2028 after a good run of results. Is he the right man for the job?
Well, is it a good run of results?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it a good run or is it just overreacting off the board? They gave him the job after 2 wins from 7, was it? After the derby. Gladbach won the derby against Köln, and that was the second win for him.
Which, let's be honest, it wasn't a great performance either by Gladbach in the derby. They were a little bit fortunate. Köln had plenty of chances in that game. Listen, yeah, Gladbach converted and Gladbach got the job done, but it was hardly a performance that you turn around and go, oh, this is the man for us.
Yes, yeah. And that's why it is so weird that they came out and gave him a 2.5-year contract, which is then probably, if you look into it in detail and say like, all right, if we give him a contract, they probably have to do at least 2.5 years. You can't do less than that. But, because that would send the message, if you just give 1.5 years, that sends the message, we're trusting you a little bit, but not really. So if you give him a contract, you have to go all in, give him a longer contract. But the chances for him to stay there for 2.5 years, I would say, are 0%. Maybe 1%.
I don't know. I'm not so sure. It feels like there's definitely been an improvement from Gladbach since he's been in charge. So they've won four in a row right now. And they're scoring goals. But they're scoring goals and they're finding a way to be really dangerous in the final third. He's tweaked some things. He's made some changes. Seoane, 4-2-3-1, stuck to that pretty religiously. Polanski has gone to three at the back and has gone with two up top quite regularly, which is really good for Tabakovic, getting the most out of him. He plays well with a second striker. Frank Honorat has been that man generally, but tactically he's made some changes and has made an important change to how Gladbach are playing. He's a Gladbach man, played there for 4 years, has been there since 2018 with the youth team, then the second team, then an assistant, so he's gone through the ranks. That gives him an extra edge that Seoane didn't have, because Seoane for so long, he was a dead man walking for probably a year. He was going to leave. He never felt like he was really trusted by the supporters anyway, but in general. And Polanski will have that on his side. At the point that they hadn't appointed somebody else after those two wins and a derby win over Köln, it's going to have to be somebody quite special to bring in at that point for fans to go, why don't you just keep him?
Keep him, but like, why not wait at least until the winter, until you announce something?
That's probably true.
Then be like, yeah, we'll wait for the end of the season, which then might make it difficult and you have to talk in March and April because you don't want to go in the last weeks without having a manager. But anyway, like at least until winter, wait until winter, you can talk in the trainings camp or whatever. To give him a contract right now, I mean, I think it makes no sense. Yes, he might be the right man because he played for Gladbach and trained the second team and youth teams. But then he also only trained that. He didn't really have any other real manager job. He was an assistant at St. Gallen, but like no real managing job. And only 3 years for the second team. And it's not like he took them from Kreisliga to the third division or whatever. I mean, he probably wasn't the worst, but like it's his first attempt in professional football. And most of the times, those don't last very long.
Well, talking about whether or not he'll be there in 2.5 years' time, out of the current 18 Bundesliga managers, how many of them have been in their job longer than 2.5 years?
God. Out of the current ones?
Out of the current list, yeah.
Probably two.
I would struggle to even say...
Maybe none.
Two.
Two is the correct answer. I mean, one of them, lads. Come on. 18 years in the job.
18 years. I mean, yeah.
Frank Schmidt.
Yeah. And then the second longest serving manager in the Bundesliga
would
at the moment,
Mainz,
with 2 years and 7 months, is...
Mainz.
No, Henriksen has only been there for 1 year and 9 months.
Hoeneß then?
Yeah, 2 years and 7 months he's been in the job. So, you know, there's not a lot of managers that make it to 2.5 years. So we'll see if Polanski can be...
Okay, 1 year then. Let's say he's still be there this time next season.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you could just wait it until the winter and then talked.
Well, there's only... out of the current 18 managers in the Bundesliga, only 8 of them have been in the job longer than a year.
Wow. It's hard, isn't it? I mean... God, what does that say about the job stability in the Bundesliga? I mean, maybe they're trying to go a little bit what Dortmund had with Edin Terzic, you know, somebody who gets it.
Did he make 2.5 years? I reckon.
In total, yes.
And he left of his own accord as well. He wasn't sacked.
Yeah. But like the second stay wasn't that long. It was 2 seasons, huh?
2 seasons. And then he was there for what? 7 or 8 months for the first spell.
Anyway, coming back to Polanski, I haven't seen much good or bad from him, so I can't really comment whether he's the right man. I always love it when they take former players, and especially when it's like defensive midfield players. But yeah, I haven't seen much.
Yeah, I think some of the changes he's made early on have brought different results and have got the best out of players that he needs to get the best of.
But then on the other hand, Gladbach was so horrible, they just couldn't perform that horrible for a longer period.
Yes. That's also true. And maybe sometimes all it needs is somebody who is happy with the club and gets it. I mean, I can obviously keep saying that, gets it, but he's got that affinity, he's got that care that perhaps somebody else might not have. At this point of the season, perhaps that's more important. if you start a new season and you know things aren't going quite the way you want them to, then you try and look for somebody who is more experienced and more understanding of how to get the best out of a good quality squad, which Gladbach have. They've got good players. They should be picking up some of the results they've picked up in the last four games. We should be expecting more of that. They've been quite, the score lines have been quite comprehensive, which I think is what will be the most positive thing, the scoring goals.
Well, yeah, the three games that they've won in a row in the league have been against Pauli, Köln and Heidenheim. So
that's where they are, though.
True, but I just think, it's like Mirko says, they're doing well, but they have only beaten teams that realistically every season, okay, the Köln, because it's the derby, maybe there's always a bit more emphasis on the game, but realistically they should be winning those three games anyway. There is still a lot to improve on. The game at the weekend against Heidenheim, they had a 3-on-1 that was utterly awful in the way that they basically just ended up passing it back to the goalkeeper, such as the lack of ability to create a chance. They've got Leipzig, Mainz, Wolfsburg and Dortmund before the winter break. How many points are they going to get out of those? And then all of a sudden, this three games in a row that they've won looks a long, long way away.
Yeah, but what is a good season for Gladbach at this point? I mean, it's a terrible start.
Midfield.
Yeah, like 12th, 13th place. That'd be great. Be a great season from this point onwards if Polanski can achieve that. Yeah. So maybe they've turned around and gone, we want to get something sorted now. We want to not have the instability hanging over. So we're going to give him a chance, you know, get him signed on. Not going to give him a massive contract because then we can get out of it if we need to. It probably won't be on massive wages as well. In that case, it is his first job in football, or at least senior level. You know, it's a safe bet financially. Things are going well. They don't want to have the instability waiting for another month if you think about how long they would have to wait at that point then to get to the winter break. I know what you mean. I understand where you're coming from. That gives you a little bit of time to reassess, but the position they're in, they've gone into him and then given him how many games they gave him? You know, they gave him seven or eight games interim. At that point, you're almost...
You kind of have to make...
You're the manager,
aren't
you?
You can keep him, but like, just be like...
I don't know if you can go lower. Would he?
Yeah, yeah.
He would probably have accepted a 1.5 year deal, in all fairness. He probably would have taken it because he is
from the club, but it does look weird to the outer world, to journalists, to other clubs. It does look weird if you sign him and then give him a low contract. I know that makes sense. If you sign him, give him at least 2.5 years to give the sign of strength and being like, yeah, we are fully behind him. We're not like, all right, we're signing you just because we didn't find anyone better.
We come to Hoffenheim next. We've been very critical, haven't we, of Christian Ilzer in general.
Oh, yeah. We all said he would be the first manager.
I think we said he'd be up there. Yeah, he was definitely on the chopping block.
I had him as the first manager.
And you have to give credit where credit's due. He's managed to finally get something of a tune out of this Hoffenheim side in recent weeks. In my opinion, he should be doing. The quality that they have is, compared to the teams that they've been around when they were 15th last year, is head and shoulders above. But we've been saying that for a few years about Hoffenheim, really, and a lot of managers have failed to do it. So, well done to him. He's got the right players in the right positions, it feels like, and they are definitely having an impact.
Yeah, it's still up and down with me, with Hoffenheim. They were efficient against Leipzig, I would say. They won 3-1 in the end, but I think they could have lost. Diomandi was causing them a lot of problems, looked very dangerous. They had a lot of opportunities. The game kind of swung a little bit, but fair enough, they got a result. We lost 4-2 to them, and we should have got a point in that game. I have no idea how they got anything out of that. Some of the other teams that they've played have been poor. You know, they've played Heidenheim. They've got enough quality that can punish poorer teams, maybe, if they can get it together, but it still doesn't feel much more than that. Having said that, Grisha Prömel is playing well and he's back. He got injured last August and missed the whole season, and immediately he's got 4 goals. He's linking up really well. He's just such a good player. I really wish we still had him, but you know, what are you going to do? But you just see how good he is at linking up with other players. And then they have also bought in some quality with Aslani, he's a fucking quality player. He's a really, really good player. He can absolutely play at an even higher level, I think, I'm convinced. But like you say, with Hoffenheim, it's very much a case of, if you just make the right decisions in terms of putting the right players on the pitch, they've got enough quality that they should easily make mid-table and then see where it goes over the course of the whole season. Where are they at the moment? They're what, sixth, seventh?
Seventh at the moment.
Yeah, so I certainly see that as being the absolute ceiling for them. It's not, I don't think they're setting themselves up for getting much higher than that. But yeah, it's certainly an improvement from last season. So you've got to also say that.
Yeah, it's interesting with Aslani. They spent so much on strikers and forward players, but it's a player who, you know, they got on the cheap and had in the youth team, and well, late youth team, but second team, and then was on loan at Elversberg, Union. Youth product.
He's a Berlin boy.
Yeah, which, you know, Union will be gutted that they didn't manage to keep him.
Well, when Hoffenheim comes knocking along,
is what
you
it
know.
Is. Yeah. But yeah, he's been great. Lempele as well, and he got on a free from Köln. Has also been really good. Traore, the winger, has also been impressive. He's managed to get a good mix of youth and experience. You look at the older players, the older heads. If you look at Baumann now, who's just played his 500th game in the Bundesliga. Pirmel, you mentioned at this point now, is an experienced Bundesliga player. Kramaric is Kramaric. We've spoken about him regularly on the podcast. And Kufalu, they signed on a free in the transfer window, plenty of experience in the Premier League, and he's settled in really well as well. In terms of work rate, they are the hardest working team in the division by a distance. They're top for sprints, they're top for intensive runs, they're top for distance covered as well. And they also lead the way in fouls. They're working hard, and they're able to. They're able to do that this year because they don't have European football. Mm. They can do that week in, week out in the Bundesliga. You don't even got to worry about the cup because they're already out of that. So they can just concentrate once a week, Bundesliga. We play this way, we give everything, and they're able to get the most out of that.
Maybe they could get Europe then.
Honestly, it probably wouldn't be a good thing for Hoffenheim in the longer run, I think, to get Europe this year. Keep it like this for a year. Have it for another year. Get really settled. Maybe be able to tweak it a little bit where you don't have to rely on all that energy being expended. You could be a little bit more efficient in the way that you attack and defend from the front, perhaps. You have one year and you can't go straight to Europa League if they got that, but even Conference League would be another six games and a qualifier, so eight, let's say, minimum. You have to change again very quickly after something's worked well to deal with that, you know, and we saw it last year. They were 15th in the Bundesliga last year. It's a surprise for Hoffenheim because they do have a lot of quality. Ilzer came in during the season last year, though. He's had a pre-season this year to, let's say, install his style of play. Been able to do that, and you're starting to see the results of that. In terms of the underlying numbers, shots per game, possession, stuff like that, they are sixth, they are seventh. They're expected goals, they're pretty close to what they've actually managed to score and concede. So where they are is the team, it's about right, you know, and with a little bit more efficiency, they could aim a little bit higher, but I agree with you. I don't think they would expect to do that. Seventh, sixth, I'd say sixth is the limit for them this year, but that would be a massive improvement. So do have to give them credit where credit is due. We come now to some off-the-pitch affairs, and, well, there's been a lot of disgruntlement, I would say, amongst German supporters in the midst of potential new security measures that will be introduced into stadiums. Between the 3rd and the 5th of December, there will be an interior ministry conference where they will discuss football fans and safety in stadium, and will look to discuss potential new measures that will be introduced. And there have already been some that have been floated. AI-backed security at stadiums, personalised tickets, and the dreaded return of collective stadium bans as well. Richard Murko, I think you guys are a little bit more well-versed in this and have probably followed it slightly closer than I have, so I will give it over to you to explain a little bit more what's been going on and why I think fans are so upset and what they've been trying to do about it.
Well, yeah, I think this all harks back to in October 2024, there was a three-hour meeting in Munich between all of the interior ministers of all the German states and the DFB and the DFL, who decided that, first of all, they wanted to form a central commission based at the DFL, which would be responsible for issuing and monitoring stadium bans. For example, the Bavarian interior minister came out and said that in the future it will no longer be left to individual clubs to decide whether to initiate proceedings and whether they deem it necessary to issue a nationwide stadium ban. Because at the moment, the way it works, if someone is deserving of a stadium ban, the club themselves say, right, well, you've got a stadium ban here, and then they can issue a request to then ban that person nationwide for a certain number of games. So, like, for example, when the Union fan threw the lighter, Union, as well as obviously banning him from the club, also requested a 3-year nationwide stadium ban, which then got given. And a lot of the politicians around surrounding football and the security of Germany are a little bit annoyed, first of all, that the clubs are responsible for this, and they would like to be the ones responsible for who can go into stadiums. One of the ministers in Hamburg, Andy Grote, said that stadium bans under clubs are not consistently enforced or even issued or initiated in the first place. This is mainly due to fan representatives that are involved in the clubs. So I think you can see that they're kind of a bit annoyed that fans even are able to defend their position in terms of whether or not stadium bans should be given out, which is, you know, just one of the ways in which they are trying to justify being able to control who goes into stadiums and what measures are needed to take place in order for fans to come into stadiums in the first place.
Yeah. And the kind of the anger from the fans comes that the general idea of the conference is like we need stricter ruling. So one idea is like we want a central authority for the stadium bans. The other is we might reduce the away tickets or just have personalized away tickets from now on. So all are rulings that are stricter and affecting the fans going to the football games. And they are basing that on basically nothing, because this police statistics say that, I mean, the amount of people getting injured in stadiums, the amount of people getting arrested in stadiums, they are consistent and even lower than a couple of seasons ago. So there is, for example, I think there's 90 people last season who have been injured by pyrotechnics in all over Germany, in all the top 4 leagues, something like that. That's one number. How many people did get arrested?
Well, just before we go on to that, the pyros, I can tell you, according to the DFB, 14,252 pyros were lit last season.
Precise.
And 95 people were injured. That's 0.6% of all pyros lit led to an injury. €11.7 million was collected in fines last season for that. So no wonder that the DFB are quite happy to keep the ban against pyros. They will happily say, yeah, well, you know, they're not safe. It's not safe in stadiums. I think the statistics would say otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, pyro injuries at stadiums actually went down in 24-25 as well compared to 23-24.
Yeah, and just in terms of Mirko, you mentioned sort of things of like criminal proceedings and so on. I mean, it is worth mentioning that the last season was, I don't know if it was the highest ever attendance in total, but certainly 25.26 million people attended football in Germany last season, which is higher than what it's been for the last two seasons. And despite that, the number of people who had criminal proceedings launched against them went down. So you're getting more people in the stadiums and yet less people are having criminal proceedings launched against them. 4,700 people had criminal proceedings launched against them out of 25.26 million attending. Around 50% of those 4,700 were for assault, resisting arrest, breach of the peace and property damage. I mean, it's worth noting property damage can include just putting stickers up. I've been to away games. I think it's Bielefeld away. Some young lads after the game putting some stickers up on lampposts, and all of a sudden 3 or 4 coppers came out of nowhere and tried to arrest them. So, you know, it's basically, I think 0.01% of people ended up having criminal proceedings launched against them out of the 25.26 million that attended a game. Despite this, a lot of these interior ministers who are insisting that German stadiums are not safe. And the reason why we need more policing is because they need to be more safe. We have to make them safer, despite the fact that I think the DFB's own questionnaire that was conducted amongst match-going fans, I don't know how many people contributed to it, to be honest, but 96% of them said that they felt safe in German football stadiums. So it's not even as though there seems to be, you know, a real fear amongst the people that you can justifiably say, oh, well, yeah, we need to be making sure that we police these stadiums a lot more, because the numbers and anything that they look into just don't seem to back it up.
Yeah, they're stable or going down on a fairly low level. If you compare it also with other big events, Oktoberfest and stuff, yeah. I don't know how many people are injured there.
Much
but
more.
It does happen that people get injured there. People get in fights at Oktoberfest and they just don't have the same talks of being like, we need a lot of policing at the Oktoberfest. Yeah, fair enough. Fan rivalries are somehow different. Like there are fan groups who like to get into fights, and it's not really like there are big groups at an Oktoberfest who like to get into a fight. But fights do happen. People drink too much. Fights happen all the time. So those things aren't treated as football fans, whereas whenever something happens in a football stadium, it feels like politicians want stricter rules. And so, yeah, since their own statistics don't say the situation has worsened, that's also the main point of what the fans have been saying in the last two match days and in between when there was the Länderspielpause, when there was the international fixtures. The fans have actually used that time to protest. And the main quote was saying, the stadiums are safe. Your own statistics suggest that. Stop the populism. And a lot of different fan groups all over Germany had the same banner, the same quote in different writings. Looked pretty cool that all of the fan groups had those writings. And then when the national teams played, a lot of fan groups from all over Germany, around 10,000 people, gathered in Leipzig and had a protest march. And there were fan groups from rivaling fan clubs, all with the same cause, saying the stadiums are safe. Don't kind of kill the youth culture. Don't kill the way we go to the stadiums. We want to pick the way we travel to the stadiums. Because like for derbies and stuff, and we've seen it also in the international fixtures, Champions League, Bayern playing at PSG, the buses get stopped. You can't take this way. They find one pyro, the whole bus has to go back. You're not allowed to travel to the country. Frankfurt fans aren't allowed in Napoli. So there's a lot of restrictions, and fans just want to keep some kind of autonomy on the way they go into football. Yes, fair enough. Stuff might happen. Some fans like to fight. Usually they're doing it outside the stadium, so the stadiums are pretty safe. But yeah, it was interesting to see how fan groups all over Germany had the banners in the stadiums for the last two match days. And then the last match day, we had 12 minutes of silence in a lot of stadiums all over Germany in multiple leagues. 12 minutes of silence of protests of saying, do you really want those quiet stadiums? Because yeah, if you attack the fan culture, in the end, fans are getting more quiet. I mean, we've seen a lot of choreographies, a lot of pyrotechnic in recent weeks. Kaiserslautern, 125 years, I think it was, choreography in a Topspiel, Zweite Bundesliga, whole stadium full of a choreography. Fan culture is still very interesting, but it lives from the freedom that the fans have. And so, yeah, it was really interesting to see that a lot of clubs in Leipzig at the protest march were marching next to each other, even though they have a big rivalry in normal. So fans, yeah, if they have one common goal, they can actually work together. That was nice to see.
That was quite funny. I think there were a couple of times where maybe certain fan groups were kind of near each other, but then there were other fan groups that were acting as sort of buffers between the two, and they sort of all managed to organize themselves. And they basically, they turned around and said that we have a bigger enemy than each other, and that is the police and the security services and the things that they're trying to force through. You know, they're the interior minister of Nordrhein-Westphalia, who are, I mean, that is probably the worst place I like to go and watch football.
Bavaria's probably worse.
Yeah, but I mean, for example, I remember there was one first game in the Bundesliga away at Dortmund. On the border, the police just stopped two buses of the fan scene, wouldn't let them go without taking all of their details, and basically made them so late that they couldn't have made the game. You know, it's just those kind of tactics. And the interior minister for there, and I mean, it's, I don't think it's any surprising that a lot of them are CDU politicians, but he expressed criticism despite the decline in the number of injuries. He said that over 1,000 people are injured in a football season is and remains unacceptable. That is 0.005%. of those that attended a game ended up being injured. And it's worth noting that those injuries include those fans injured by the police. So it's not even all fan on fan violence. Like whenever I go to a football game, the most threat I feel of violence, even going as an away fan, is the fucking police. They're all riot geared up, balaclavaed, they've got their batons ready, they are just itching to get involved. They love a fight. They will happily attack dozens of match-going fans and throw pepper spray into groups with kids just because fans are stood singing for them to open up the gates, because apparently some clubs, you know, don't realize that maybe a sold out away end needs more than four gates to go in. They will take any excuse to get involved, to just, you know, overreact, throw pepper spray into areas and contribute to the danger, cause a bigger crush, you know.
Or also just keep the fans so long, you said it, yeah, with the buses, they keep them so long that the fans get nervous,
yeah,
or want to go to the toilet. They're like, you can't go out here. And then stuff happens.
This idea that in order to make the stadiums feel more safer, there needs to be more police in the area is totally contradictory to the actual fucking experience of going to a lot of stadiums, particularly the away trips that I've done with Union, that I have felt way more safer when there's been less police around. End of story.
The thing is, I mean, you can't have zero police.
No, obviously not.
And there are derbies where it's like, all right, fair enough. We need to, it's clever that the fans A come from this side, fans B come from the other side. That's okay. But sometimes, for example, Freiburg play at Heidenheim. Then Heidenheim think the world goes down today. They put all the police they have there. And then in the end, nothing happens, because it's like, you're Heidenheim. What? Nothing will probably happen. So they're overestimating the danger that goes out from fan groups, just because, yes, stuff has happened in the past, but if it's not a derby or anything has happened or any other rivalries, match days can be quite peaceful.
Ultimately, it's just about trying to collect more data on the fans and the people that go to the stadiums. It's the same with the personalized tickets. That is being done so that the police can collect all of that data. Personalized tickets are already in effect for most Bundesliga teams.
For the home games, for
because,
example.
Yeah, my match ticket is in my name from the club. Granted, if I just gave it to a mate or whatever and didn't do anything, fair enough, no one would know. But if I sell it on through the club to another fan, they have to be a member. Their name is attached to it. How many people can still go to Bundesliga games and just buy a ticket on the gate? Most of the tickets have been bought already under a name that I would say, without knowing any number whatsoever, but a large, large majority end up going in under the name that they have.
And even away tickets, yeah, it's probably, yeah, personalized order, or it's like a fan club orders,
yeah,
10 tickets.
Exactly.
And like, but they have the name of the fan club.
And as I say, but that information was local to
the club.
To the clubs. They didn't have to share it with the police. And this just seems like another attempt by the police, by the security services, to try and get information on certain individuals within society that they'd like to keep tabs on. This, you know, the clubs have been taking care of this. Same with the banning, stadium bans and so on. All of that information and what the clubs were deciding to do, or on what was happening, was being done by the clubs.
And it's a system that works.
Yeah.
Because I don't know the exact number, but I think it's a middle or lower hundreds of people in Germany who have stadium bans.
I think 470,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I read.
That's what what I also think. So it's not like there's 10,000, yeah, people all over Germany who can't go to the stadium and you can't talk to them because they're animals. It's like a couple hundred who messed up in the past. A lot of stadium bans are probably correct.
Yeah.
But if the club knows the person, they can decide better than an authority 300 kilometers away who doesn't know the person. In the end, if they come up with a central authority, the rules will probably be stricter and there will probably be more stadium bans. But does this help? Will this bring down the number of people injured after a season? Maybe there's 3% less people injured. But is this really worth all the trouble that other people are having, that fanzines are having? I don't think so, because the situation is actually pretty good in Germany. And I don't see the reason to change something like out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think what I've read on it anyway about the stadium ban is it will be, the suggestion has been that there will be partial stadium bans or block bans as soon as an investigation is launched into,
yeah,
a potential infringement of whatever the rule may be, regardless of whether it's innocent or guilty in,
yeah,
the end.
Yeah.
It'll be a direct ban, which again is unfair and becomes an easy way for, well, the police to,
so the authorities just,
to police
just before the derby, the local authority could be like, we have investigation to this 200 people from the away section, stadium ban in effect. 2 years later, when they win on court and like, that's not an effect, can go to the stadium again. But like, if there will be changes, bannings will probably be implemented quicker. It will be stricter from the authorities. And yeah, that's what the fans are afraid of.
Yeah. So I think all in all, it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this meeting, because it's worth reminding, as I said at the beginning, the DFB and the DFL were both there at this original meeting where a lot of these plans were drawn out. No fan organisation was invited to any of those talks. As it seems at the moment, given the fact that the fans have now started to make a lot of protest, and it's also worth saying that a lot of clubs have come out and supported their own fans in these protests, and now we've got the situation where the DFL and the DFB are starting to sort of at least make statements in public that, oh yeah, well, we want to support the fan culture. There are four elements that the fans have been demanding with regards to what's been going on, mainly the minimalized police deployment in stadiums, because they say, as I've sort of said, that the police are the biggest danger. No collective bans or preemptive bans, reduce the overall surveillance costs, and saying that the money could be used elsewhere, particularly in the development of the youth game and so on, and just to essentially recognise the importance of fan culture and allow and accept the use of pyrotechnics. That is what the fans have been demanding. The DFL and the DFB have now sort of said, well, yeah, we want to recognise the fans as well, and it's very important. But as I say, they were there at the beginning of these talks, and it will be interesting to see what they then end up saying in private when they meet on, I think it's between the 3rd and the 5th of December. Because, yeah, whether or not we think that the DFL and the DFB are going to stick up for the fans' rights, I think we all probably have the same opinion about that and their lack of desire to really do that.
Yeah, I think we'll know more and be able to analyse in more depth, perhaps, once that meeting has happened, that conference, and what comes out of it. To finish off, we wanted to have a little look at young stars in the Bundesliga, because there have been a lot this season. Before matchday 10, or by matchday 10 rather, 34 teenagers had played in the Bundesliga this year, which is more than all but two seasons. And 6,948 minutes played for those teenagers was at highest in 14 years.
So that's under
18. Wow. Teenagers, under 20.
Under 20.
Under 20, 19 20 and below. Under. And yeah, there have been some real standout stars, haven't there? If you look at, in particular, you'd say Leonard Karl at Bayern, who's been very impressive, their youngest ever goal scorer in the Champions League now. And Said Almaler at Köln, who was in the Germany squad.
Yeah.
Perhaps just surprisingly, but didn't play, but he was in the squad and was selected.
I think he deserved a call-up, I would say.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, brilliant season in the Bundesliga. Didn't start all matches, but it didn't matter for him. If he was a substitute, if he was a starter, he played well for Köln. 2 goals, 2 assists in 9 games. Pretty solid. And, I mean, also against Frankfurt, came on, brought some danger. He is a class player. And, I mean, we will probably see him again for the national team, just because, I mean, the quality is just there. Maybe it's so easy to spot because he plays for Köln, but he's good.
He is good, no doubt about that. And then others like Luka Vuskovic at Hamburg, who was a centre-back, perhaps not the usual kind of player you'd look at when looking at exciting young talents, but he's impressed there. Same with Finjelic at Stuttgart, and then the more attacking players, Diamanda, we mentioned him at Leipzig, and he's been really impressive, even through gritted teeth for a Leipzig player, but he has been really good when watching him. Uedraogo as well, also at Leipzig. He's a Schalke boy originally, of course, but suffered a lot with injuries as well, so it's really good to see him doing well.
Well, he's just been announced just before recording, he's done his tendons in his left knee and he's going to be out for many weeks, which you can interpret as months, basically.
Oh, poor lad.
Yeah. Just
played for Germany.
Got his first cap.
Scored for Germany.
Yeah.
Scored on the weekend. Pretty nice goal.
Yeah.
And got injured.
And he's really struggled with injuries. Like, it's been a real problem for him in like the last couple of years. He's been a young talent for a while, under 17 world champion, under 17 European champion with Germany. And killer. Yeah. That's actually bad news. Even if he's a Leipzig player, that is really bad news. So that is a shame. Moving on, Christian Cofana at Leverkusen. We mentioned him, but he's only 19. Traore at Hoffenheim, also only 19. Can Uzun at Frankfurt. He's just turned 20, admittedly, but certainly at the start of the season, he was still 19, and that was when he was at his best, in all fairness. Manzambi at Freiburg is another one who's been really good this season. Mats at Leverkusen, you go on, there are plenty of young players who've really impressed this season, and it already feels like the next generation of young Bundesliga stars are starting to emerge, perhaps a little bit more well-spread than perhaps we would say in other years, where it's been Dortmund probably hogging and picking out the star youngsters.
True. Just to bring that, though, to Germany, a lot of those players are maybe not German. And I was wondering when I saw that we were going to look at this, I was wondering whether or not Germany maybe does have a bit of a problem developing talent, or maybe making sure that talent gets developed, because obviously they're not responsible for their club career, but ultimately it still does have an impact on, you know, maybe what happens in the national team. For example, right, Germany 2014 won the under 19 Euros, all 19 or under, so 11 years ago, so they're all pretty much 30 years old or less. And so we've seen the majority of their career. They had a squad of 19 at that tournament. Of those 19, two declared for another team. So Akpok Guma played 8 times for Nigeria, and I think Dudziak had 1 cap for Tunisia. So of those remaining 17, how many of those do you think earned a full cap for the national team?
I mean, usually I would say a third. But since you ask it like that, it has to be lower. So I would say probably only 3. But I would say it's still realistic if it's only 6. Like 6 to 9 should be realistic. 30 to 50% should be realistic, I would say.
John, do you have a quick guess?
It will be under 5. It will be 3 only.
It was a really hard German team to break into. Just world champions,
yeah,
admittedly.
Okay,
but
yeah, that's a fair point.
The way you asked it, 3, 4?
It is three.
Who?
Do you have a quick guess?
I would struggle to guess, I think.
Fair enough.
But
well, 2 you definitely would, I mean, you know all 3, but 2 are very big names even now. Joshua Kimmich.
Okay, I was trying to think of when it would, so Kimmich would have been, okay.
Yeah, and Julian Brandt was the other one.
Okay.
But then other than that, the only person, and he only got 2 caps, was Niklas Stark.
God.
Right.
In those 11 years, there's been about, I reckon, probably between 350 to 400 Bundesliga games since that tournament. Of those 19 players, how many do you think played 50 Bundesliga games or more?
It has to be more. But then on the other hand, they also have the option of going to other leagues.
True. Yeah, I mean, there is that. But
yeah.
And no, but the suggestion would be then that they would be more because they haven't been good enough to go to other leagues, let's say.
Yeah, or just playing Zweite Bundesliga.
7?
It has to be more than 50%. It has to be like 50, 60%. 50 is like 1.5 seasons. I mean, even if you're injured, you make that. If you have a contract for 4 seasons, you should make that. And if you're young, you're getting a 4-year contract. So it should be 10 plus. If you ask again, maybe it's lower than 10, but like it should be 8 to 12 in that area.
Of the squad of 19, only 9 have ended up playing 50 Bundesliga games or more. And I just kind of found that interesting, particularly because, and we mentioned it with a couple of players in this topic, 2023, the under-17 German team won the Euros and the World Cup in the same year.
Yeah.
They're all now 19. And when you go through the list, it is astounding how few appearances these players have actually made. I'm not even talking about like, oh, should they be in the Bundesliga and blah, blah, blah. They're all 19. But goalkeeper Max Schmidt has made 1 appearance in the last 2 years. Most players in this list have played 10 to 11 games professionally since in the last 2 years.
Mainly in the Regionalliga, so not a very high level.
Now, you do get some. You mentioned Finn Jelch, for example. He's got 10 appearances for Stuttgart this season. He was in that team. Oedraogo was also in that
squad. And there are a couple of others who are sort of having a half-decent season. Maximilian Henning was on loan in Austria at the moment in the top division, and he's playing well there. He's on loan from Bayern. But, you know, there's a lot of people in this list. Paris Brunner scored 5 goals in 7 games at the World Cup 2 years ago. He was the second highest goal scorer. He's played 82 minutes of club football.
Mate, he has the work ethics of a 5-year-old, yeah, but, of course.
Well, he's at Monaco now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's at Monaco and he's played 82 minutes in Ligue 1. You know, all of these players are 19, to get to my point, finally. And you just look at how little football they are actually playing. And whilst there are, as you say, John, quite a lot of young teenage talent coming through in the Bundesliga overall, it's quite noticeable that I think Germany has a big problem with trying to bring through their next generation of young players. And it's not something that is just suddenly happened, because, as I say, 10 years ago, when they had a successful team, didn't really manage to bring much through. Again, now you've got a great group of young players. None of them are playing football.
Surprising, because you would expect German clubs to rely on their youth talent and play them when they have them more often. Yeah. Interesting. But there are a lot of interesting young talent in the Bundesliga outside of just Germany.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing them develop in the Bundesliga. I think, like I said, it's across more teams and more evenly spread out at the moment, it feels like. So I'll be interested to see how they get on in the coming months and years. So that brings an end to this month's episode of the Bundesliga Diaries. Richard and Mirko, thank you as ever.
Cheers, mate. Nice Cheers. Chat, as always.
How are we looking in the kick tip league before we wrap things up?
Well, the three of us may be not so good. Let's start at the actual top of the table. We've got another new leader. Stephen Fraser now leads by 1 point from Eberwoistan. And our last leader, Simon Kay, is a further 5 points back. There's a nice, tight little competition going on at the top of the table. Unfortunately for us, we're a little bit further back. John, you're 24 points off top in sixth. And Mirko and me are tied another 2 points further back. So between the three of us, it's very, very close. We just need to pick up a little bit. But I think I had a good week last week. So we're slowly finding a bit of form, understanding how the league's turning out this season.
I'm confidently settling on about 12 to 15 points a week, it feels like.
Yeah,
at the moment,
yeah,
which feels solid.
Yeah,
feels solid.
Yeah, I think that's the minimum. And then every now and again, maybe try and hit a 20 pointer. Yeah. And then you might still be able to win my season ticket, John.
But not another question yet.
Also, did I specify on what shirt I would bring?
I mentioned I'm going to bring a shirt.
Yeah. I looked through my clothes and I found an old Frankfurt shirt, size L.
Yeah.
That should fit most of listeners. So yeah, that's up for grabs. And I would say the winner can choose either the shirt or the ticket.
Ooh,
if he picks the shirt, you can keep your ticket. If he picks the ticket, I can keep the shirt. And then it will be up for grabs next season.
Nice. We'll have to get a picture of that shirt and put it up to...
I'll give you one. I'll send you one.
Nice.
Looking at fixtures to keep you excited. Well, Leverkusen Dortmund this weekend on match day 12 will be an enticing one.
Top spiel.
That is the top spiel. Then, of course, the Pokal next week. Stuttgart Bayern match day 13 will be an interesting one, as will Leipzig against Frankfurt. Also the top spiel for match day 13. Leverkusen Köln match day 14. Kind of a Rhine derby. I know it's not the Rhine derby, but it's still a derby of sorts. That'll also be one to keep an eye on.
And obviously the Nord derby, Hasfeld Bremen as well, match day 13.
Yeah. Okay.
Finally, since how many years? I mean, they had one in the Zweite Bundesliga. That was the last one, but Hasfeld was gone for decades.
So yeah, plenty to keep you excited and your eyes on the Bundesliga in the coming weeks. We'll be back in the middle of December before the final match day of the year. Thank you as ever, and we'll see you next month.
more than 75-80% of his squad, which when you're what, 6-7-8 months away from a World Cup.
6-7.
Cunt.
Fucking hell.
Which when you're that's getting it.
I've never said that. And I was like, I have to say it now. Don't know what it means, but no one knows, eh?
You good?
Yeah.